all aboard the Gus bus, Michael. Can Gus Malzahn and Tommy Castellanos resurrect Florida State's offense in 2025 after one of the worst showings in program history last season? Stay tuned, as this is what we are talking about in this entire episode. Michael, we've got so much information to throw at you. For the first time, I think, in PTS history, we're going to have to break this one in half. Now, you guys know we get long-winded. We talk a lot, but we have a lot to cover here. You know, like our famed alumni, rest in peace, Burt Reynolds would say, we got a long way to go and a short time to get there. Because, Michael, it is officially August, which means Florida State football plays a game this month, man. I am so excited to be back. Like I always joke, I'm like a bug to a bug zapper, man. I don't care if we were 12-0 or 0-12 the season before. I'm an FSU fan, man. I cannot wait to get back into Doak Campbell Stadium and watch this team play. And so we got a lot of information to throw at you with these episodes as we preview Florida State's 2025 offense. Michael, I think the best way to do this is we're going to do a two-parter, right? I think the start, we'll do the architect.
Yeah,
and we'll do the system, and then part two, we'll break off into the personnel, where we relate that system to the personnel, and we go through each individual position group. But man, ton to talk about. Really excited about this episode. Before we do that, how are you, my friend? And thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jesse. I love it. I'm super excited. I cannot wait. I cannot believe that it's going to be August 30th. 3:30, Doak Campbell Stadium, Alabama. Man, if you don't got tickets, then, you know, watch it on TV, because it's going to be a great one, and I'm excited. I'm like you. I just, you know, I ended the season sad, but now I'm excited. I'm ready for us to compete. I think, you know, this might be a better season than last year, and as my friend Ricky Jenkins would say, we got a lot of fish to fry and a little time to cook it.
I love it, man. I'm excited. I do think it's going to be a much better season. And there's a lot of things that we're going to talk about through these next couple episodes as we get ramped up, because we have offensive preview. Then we're going to be doing a defensive preview coming at you next week. We have some final season prediction stuff. So we got a lot of stuff coming out, man. I'm excited, because I feel like when you turn the leaf to this new season, you can finally just bury 2-10, right?
That's
I don't know how this season's going to look. I think it's going to look a lot better than that. I'm just ready to put that in the rearview mirror. And Michael, I'll tell you, I've been struggling, man, because I'm holding out hope. I got my Bama tickets. I got all that stuff. I wasn't planning on going. I had to take a day off of work. I still have to take two more days off. I'm like, I'm just on the fence. I probably need to list these things if I'm not going to go, so I can be here to do our live shows and things like that. I'm still holding out hope. And then I get served with freaking jury duty this week, the week of the Bama game.
So I love it.
I think God's telling me not to be in Tallahassee on that Saturday, to stay here.
Stay your butt home.
But that's okay, because like I said, we're going to want to jump on and do all kinds of content surrounding that game. So maybe that's just the will be done, and I'll be at home for that. But man, before we jump into this episode, Michael, I do have a little bit of a big announcement here that I'm really excited for the 2025 season. Our friends at Alumni Hall FSU have returned to help out and supporting your guys here at Plant the Spear. So when we talk about the gear that you wore last year, Michael, you know, we all probably have your favorite shirt. Yep. We all probably have your favorite hat. It's your lucky hat. I don't know about you, Michael. I change my clothes about 16 times a game if things ain't going well.
Yep.
But you know what, man? After last year,
it's all bad.
It's all bad luck. It's all bad luck. So box all that stuff up, put it deep into the closet, and go to Alumni Hall FSU to grab you some new FSU gear. 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee, or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and make sure you save 10% with code SPEAR. They got tailgating supplies, clothes for the whole family. It is the ultimate Seminole shopping experience. So we're really excited to have those guys back with us for this season. Now, Michael, we're going to start things by getting into some fall camp luncheon, coaches luncheon talking points here before we jump into the offensive preview, because there were some things that you could extract from that offensive side, mainly is what we're going to talk about here, that are relevant to the offense. To start with, Michael, closed camp, not a surprise after spring. We figured if you're going to close the spring, why would you not close the fall? Because that's when you're really getting into X's and O's. So this is not a surprise. I don't think it's a big deal. I kind of like the move, really. You know, Florida State has a lot riding on the season, and every distraction that can be eliminated should be. Plus, there's so much new and unknown about this team. I don't think Alabama has like some scout who goes and reads the, you know, the message boards or the practice, you know, reports or whatever.
Yeah.
They got scouts that scout this team, right? But when you have so much unknown and such a big game to open the season, why give them any advantage? Why even let them know what this looks like or what that looks like? So I think this is probably a smart move. It may look dumb in the long run if you don't go out there and win games. But really, man, at the end of the day, it makes no difference for us at Plant the Spear, right? We built this outlet off of not having access. I think it's kind of fun now that everybody's on the same footing, right? Yeah. It gives us the same advantage as everybody else. But man, at the end of the day, I don't think it's a bad thing. But buddy, strap in for that Alabama game, because we are jumping off the deep end in game one. We are going to be going into that with no idea what we got against Alabama. So man, that close practice this year is going to make for a interesting week one.
Yeah, I mean, and at the end of the day, let's close practice, open practice, it hasn't mattered much, you know, in the grand scheme of things. It's not like, you know, the media is recording the actual play calling and the scheming and the play sheet and Alabama sitting there waiting. When is Plant the Spear going to release the film for, you know, the plot?
Like, yeah, exactly.
That doesn't happen. And so, you know, it really only affects the media members who actually get credentialed to cover those practices. You know, they'll have to rely on sources and like you said, man, we built this thing on not even having access to all of that. And yet we're able to get you guys the information you need and want as fans, because we're a fan site first. But I think it's going to be helpful for them to just focus, without, you know, having the media around. They can just focus on trying to get better, trying to get this offense up and running. You know, listen, you can pull up UCF, Auburn, Tulsa, Arkansas. You can see Gus Malzahn's offense for years. Yeah. And, you know, unless he's kind of reinvented himself coming to Florida State, they're going to be similar elements to this offense that we see there. So Alabama has enough tape on Gus Malzahn. They don't need the media members. But I do think, yeah, to eliminate the distractions and really just hone in and focus on what they can be this year, I think that's important for the team.
Yeah, you're right. They got 20 years of film to watch. Now, things have changed over the years, obviously.
For sure.
And it's a personnel thing. But, you know, talking about Gus, man, one of the other takeaways, Michael, we are so back. Gus Malzahn traded in the visor for a Bobby Bowden straw hat.
I saw it.
We are back.
I couldn't believe it. We are back.
I can't wait. I love it. It was just, of course, we're joking. That's tongue in cheek. But I thought that was funny as well. But one of the big takeaways that I had listening to some of these interviews were how big injuries were as a limiting factor in the spring. This is something Gus talked about. This is something that Herb Hand talked about. Really mentioned that it was kind of hard to build continuity in the spring with so many guys being out with injuries. But one of the things that they did say was that summer was really big for them. It went really well in kind of building that continuity. You know, what that does is something they talked about is that this puts a lot of emphasis on fall camp, right? This is going to be a sprint to get this team ready for Alabama, because you had held so many guys out of spring. Now, granted, the good thing is it sounds like you're pretty healthy as of right now coming into fall camp, because you were precautious with your players there and your rehabs. But man, to hear the impact that spring had with all the injuries kind of raised my ears a little bit, because again, with so many changes, we were like, man, spring was going to be crucial to getting this team where they want to be. So man, that was something I thought was interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think about it, they weren't able to practice. Like, they didn't have a full-fledged offensive line, so they were playing with a lot of the backups. So you weren't able to really see, like, you know, is this line gelling? Do we have the right set of people? Like, I mean, I'm sure they believed in the recruiting and the transfer portal players that they got, but the offensive line was probably one of the biggest elements of injury, you know, that really the spring took away from, was you use those, well, I think it's 16 practices to get that line to gel, to begin to do that, so that when you come into fall camp, they're already ready kind of to go. So I do think really part of the first set of practices here in fall camp is really kind of like a spring-esque to get an acclimation that you missed out on. So you have to hope that they can accelerate what they would have done in the spring now in the fall, so that they don't miss out. They have 25 practices to get ready for Alabama. And so I imagine that those first couple practices are, hey, let's just gel. Let's just try to get all the injured players back up to speed, make sure all the summer conditioning is working out and doing all those things. So we'll see how that pans out.
Yeah, I did hear Gus say something. I think it was something around 14 or so practices they have before they start going against scout team. So it's really like kind of 2 weeks of just install and prep, and then 2 weeks for Alabama. Yeah. Some of the other things, man, obviously there was a very limited viewing period in the first practice. Didn't get to see a whole lot. What I did see, though, Croman does not look like a freshman.
Bro looks like a 40-year-old vet that's played in the NFL and probably lifted gorillas.
Like, that dude, I already had him near the top of the depth chart. I think, man, I'm Very excited to see him. We're going to talk about that later in the running back preview. Another shout out for Javon Boggs. I want to talk about that when we get to the receiver part. But man, Deuce Robinson shouted him out as well. That's now three players and some coaches who have brought him up. Really getting excited about Javon Boggs here. Herb Hand, this is going to be music to your ears and mine as well. I know this is one of your biggest complaints last year, mine as well. Herb Hand, during his interview, said, look, I like to have depth, but he said, I'm a ride or die type of guy, and he does not feel the need to rotate just to rotate. Thank you, Herb Hand. So he's basically like, let me get my five on there. You know, if there's an injury concern or you want to rest guys up for the course of the season, sure, we'll rotate. He said you want to have about, you know, eight or nine guys that you can trust. But, I mean, as far as that starting five goes, man, if you get them together and you get them gelled and playing together well, there's no reason to substitute. And I love to hear that.
Oh, I love to hear that, too, because five in the hand is better than eight in the bush. I mean, right. Period. And period. Like, I mean, I understand you want to develop depth. I understand you want to make sure you have backup players and cross-training them. I understand all that's important. But when we get into a game, man, I want to know we got five guys that we are riding and dying with, and unless one of them gets injury or they're just getting blown up after blown up after blown up, we're not rotating. And I think that was a problem. I know in 22 and 23, you know, it worked out well and all those things. But really, man, we saw the downfall of that last season over and over again. We just, there was no consistency. So five in hand is better than nine in the bush.
I agree. Couple of last points here that I got. Luke Pettibon is a dude. That's kind of what he said. He's everything you want him to be. Good leader, not afraid of confrontation or to hold people accountable. Man, I think that's what you got to have, right? You got to have guys who are not scared to kind of get up in your face and not accept anything but the standard that needs to be set. And so that's really encouraging because we had heard a lot about Luke Pettibon. He was one of my top impact players this year at center. Really excited about that. One other thing I thought that I like Herb Hand, man. He's a football guy, right? I love listening to him talk. On the tempo, one of the things I thought was interesting, right? They obviously want to run a 2-minute pace the entire game to wear teams down. But one of the things he says, we don't want to hurry up to screw up. Yeah. And I like that because it's like sometimes you don't want to try and run so fast you trip over your feet.
That's right.
And so it sounds like this is a calculated approach, right? You want to go as fast as you can, but do it as efficiently as you can. So I really liked hearing that as well. One other thing that I heard from Tim Harris, wide receivers coach, is they're working on contested catches and perimeter blocking were the two main focus points coming into the fall and what they worked on over the summer. So those are good things to be working on as well because you're going to have some jump balls with Deuce Robinson. You're going to have to go get some of these passes that they're going to throw. And then obviously with the Gus Malzahn offense, that perimeter blocking is key. So, man, give me some thoughts on those two things and we'll jump into the offense.
Yeah, no, I really think that's super important. And I do think the Herb Hand quote about, you know, we want to go tempo, but we don't want to go so fast that we're just messing up. It's important. Tempo only works if everybody knows what they're doing, right? It'd be like you know, trying to put a pizza in the oven super fast and never turning on the oven. The pizza is just going to stay there. It's just going to be bad. But if you understand that, hey, I got to put this in the oven. I got to turn it on. I got to put it at the temperature, get it ready to go. Got to preheat all those things. That pizza is going to be great. Same thing with an offense. Everybody knows where they're supposed to go. You know, you're only making in a tempo like offense, you're only making, you know, one to two calls that everybody should know pretty quickly. So you're not going on a gambit of plays. You're not really switching up the offensive formation too much on tempo. So if everybody's on the same page, then you're able to get in that. That's how you wear teams down. And listen, you know, I complained about this so much last year about the wide receiver blocking. I mean, my gosh, we had 5-6 people blocking, you know, 6-1 people. Like, come on, like we've got to be better than this. So I was excited to hear Tim Harris talk about, especially the perimeter blocking. Like that is the only way. That's one of the big ways that this offense flows is through that.
Yeah, and then the last thing that I did want to talk about, I said we were going to keep it offense only, but one thing I want to give a shout out to a defensive coach here, man. I said I love Herb Hand. I think Pot Roast might be my favorite. Some of the clips coming out of fall camp, like those boys playing for Odell and Pot Roast, they might have PTSD by the time the season's over because let me tell you what, there was some butt chewing, some things that had to be bleeped out of film.
I need it. They needed it.
I need it, man. I love that type of coaching. I mean, they were not letting them slack up a bit. And, you know, one of the things, and I can't say what he said, but he was going after James Williams, a guy that he has a really, really close relationship with him. Man, he was on his behind about all you can do is rush the passer. And there were some other words in there that I won't say, but man, that just shows you how hard they're pushing these kids, whether you're friendly or not. They're pushing these kids. I mean, I loved hearing that type of coaching from Pot Roast.
My favorite part was when, you know, because it's hot and he goes, this is the time we play the game. He's basically saying, we play Alabama at 3:30 and you can't be tired. And I was like, yes, coach, get them.
Yeah, exactly. So I loved hearing that type of stuff, man. And really an overarching thought, man, I think this is going to be such a big upgrade at the coaching staff that you're going to see things do better. So, Michael, let's jump into this offensive preview. We spent a few minutes talking about some other things there, but the heart of the episode is going to be talking about this 2025 offense. I put a lot of time into kind of getting this episode ready here. So we got a lot of stuff to go through. You know, grab a cold one or a hot beverage or whatever and dig in with us, because I think you guys are going to enjoy this. We're kind of going to start with part one, which is more the system and the architect. We're going to talk about Gus Malzahn and his offense. Then we're going to go into the personnel. We're going to talk about each position group individually. And then at the end, we'll kind of bring it all together here. How I want to approach this, Michael, we're a fan-first outlet, right? That's what we're trying to do. So we want to take a fan-first approach with a pinch of football nerd on top, because you guys know I like nerding out on some of this stuff, digging into charts and stats and things like that. Michael usually brings the heat with the X's and O's here. So we're going to do a lot of that, but we also want to keep this more like, I'm getting ready to walk into Doak Campbell Stadium. I'm getting ready to sit down and watch this Alabama game. What can I expect from a fan's perspective? And so that's kind of what we're going to approach with. And so let's first start with the architect himself. Let's talk about Gus Malzahn, the new offensive coordinator. Most of you guys already know a little bit about Gus Malzahn, maybe not a lot of it. So we're going to spend some time talking about him. And we're also going to kind of pretend that maybe you've never watched one of our episodes before, because we have a ton of new subscribers. So some things may get repeated from other episodes, but just hang with us. We got a lot of information here that I know you guys are going to enjoy. So let's first start with Gus Malzahn as his career experience here. Now, this is a guy that's got a ton of experience, man. Arkansas OC in 06, Tulsa OC from 07 to 08. Then he made the move to Auburn in 2009 through 2011 as OC. Got his first head coaching job at the college ranks at Arkansas State 2012. Stayed there for a cup of coffee, then got back to Auburn as the head coach from 2013 to 2020. UCF 21 to 24. Now he's at Florida State. We know he's won a national championship as a coordinator. He's played for a national championship as a head coach. You know, man, when I look at Gus Malzahn, right, this feels like a high floor hire. Maybe not the highest ceiling, but definitely a high floor hire. And I think the biggest question right now, Michael, when you talk about Gus Malzahn, is we talked about all the success and all the experience, but most of the good experience, most of the good success is in the rearview mirror. And so can he rekindle that Gus Malzahn magic that saw him kind of make a meteoric rise through the coaching ranks early in those years? Because let's be honest, man, this system isn't new or innovative anymore, but you're also getting a OC-only version of Gus Malzahn. And we're going to talk more about that. There's some interesting thoughts I want to talk about with UCF and that whole situation here in just a minute. But, man, tons of experience. Again, I think this was a very high-floor move by Mike Norvell.
Yeah, I think Mike Norvell went to his comfort zone. He knew he needed to give up the offensive play calling to be more of the CEO type coach. And he went into, okay, who am I most comfortable with? Who runs a similar offense to what I run, but yet I feel super comfortable handing over the reins? Well, why not go get the guy who basically taught me this offense?
He gave me
the whole thing. And so he went and, you know, Gus, and we'll talk a little bit about Gus, because you're right, there is some interesting dynamics to that. And I wonder if in those dynamics, now that he's only back to OC Gus, if some of the magic, some of the creativity comes back. Because that was one of the things about Gus, is that maybe his offense had become archaic. But I wonder now if he's not focusing on the other stuff of being a head coach.
Yeah.
He can only be an OC, if that would allow him to get more creative with this offense. And I'm curious to see what new things we can see. But also, we already know what this offense is going to be, and I know we're going to talk about that in a second.
Yeah, and I think that's a big point, man. Sometimes in life, and that can go for coaching or anybody, whenever you start adding eggs to your basket, it just kind of clouds what you're able to do. You know, when I first started this, man, I loved making hype videos and all that type of stuff with this. But then it turned into like, okay, well, now we got to do a podcast. Now I got to write articles. Now I got to fix the website. Now I got to make the graphics and do the social media. And so it's like you kind of lost sight of what you originally loved about it and what got you into it. So I'm hoping with him getting back to being just an OC, doesn't have to focus on, and plus head coaching has changed so much over the years with everything that you gotta manage. I think this is going to be a good situation for Gus, but we're going to talk more about that in just a second. So let's start by talking about his career highlights by the numbers here. Now, these are going to be more of, we're going to break it down between head coach and OC. We're going to focus in on UCF next, but as a career here, Gus Malzahn has a scoring average of 31.9 points per game, averaged over 30 points per game in 12 of 14 seasons as a head coach. Scoring average as an offensive coordinator only. I thought this was kind of important to break it off because this is when he's not managing head coaching duties. Averaged 36.2 points per game, and they averaged over 41 points per game in 3 of 6 seasons, Michael. This is crazy. And really, I had to highlight this. When you look at that 08 Tulsa offense.
Yeah, that offense was wild.
They scored 87 touchdowns. They had a 5,000-yard passer, a 1,200-yard rusher, and 3 1,000-yard receivers. That is just absolutely insane to have those kind of numbers. Mike, we've basically had 1,000-yard receiver, I think, to Morion Terry in like the last 7-8 years, and they had 3 in 1 year. Now, are we going to get that type of Tulsa offense? That I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see how things pan out. But I thought it was important, like I said, to kind of break this down. But what this tells me, right, is when you're looking at 12 of 14 seasons as a head coach, you averaged over 30 points a game. 4 of 6 seasons, you averaged over 30 points a game as a coordinator. 3 of those were over 41 points per game. One other thing that I noticed, too, is almost every single team Gus went to got immediately better. Arkansas in 06, when he was the offensive coordinator, they went from 4 wins to 10. Tulsa in 07, they went from 8 wins to 10, then 11. Auburn, they went from 5 wins to 8, then 14 in a national title. Arkansas State, they went the same, but they still went from 10 wins to 10 wins. Auburn, they went from 3 to 12 when he took over the title, or when he took over as head coach and went to the title game. UCF went, did go from 6 to 9, but they had been better under Scott Frost there. But man, everywhere he's went has seen this immediate jump in wins. Now, granted, it probably came with some other coaches too, but I think what you're looking at here, man, is like this system can work, and it can pretty much, you can almost, not always, but almost take to the bank averaging around 30 points a game. And when you're talking about in the college game nowadays, if you have a decent defense, 31 points per game should win you some games. So, man, the track record speaks for itself. Like, it's probably not the most prolific offense. Like, maybe you're not scoring 50, 60 points a game, but I feel like you can feel pretty confident that you're going to get close to that 30-point mark.
Well, I think, too, in this common era of college football, like you said, if you have a decent enough defense, 30 points should at least have you in the game in the fourth quarter.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
That you should be able to – you should be winning a higher percentage of your games than losing a higher percentage of your game when you're averaging 30 points a game. Especially because we play – Florida State plays in an era where now, yes, almost everybody's spread out. You have very few just, you know, kind of compact – you know, downhill I formation teams. Everybody's kind of running a version of that out of the spread formation. And so Gus Malzahn offense is different because not only is it spread, not only is it downhill running, but it's also tempo. And I know we're going to get into that in a second, but all of that plays into the factor of it being able to score points because teams just cannot adjust as quickly. We've heard coaches talk about how, you know, adjusting and getting ready for a Gus Malzahn offense is really hard and difficult. And so, yeah, being able to score 30 points gives you hope, especially since last year's team couldn't even touch 30 to save their life. Right. So it'd be nice to get back to that. I mean, before that, Mike Norvell's offense at Florida State were averaging 30 plus points a game. We did a whole episode around how when they scored 30 plus points, the record of Florida State in those games are pretty good. So it'd be, it's good to see that historically, you know, 12 out of the 14 seasons, you know, 3 out of the 6 seasons scoring 40 plus points as an OC, 36.2 points a game. That gives me hope that that trend will be able to continue for Florida State.
Yeah. And I mean, like you said, in the modern era, you're not going to win with 20 points, right? I mean, it only took us 11 games to score over 21 points last year. But I feel, you know, like we said, man, if you hit 30, 31 points a game, that at least gives you an opportunity with a decent defense to win some games. And really, I think that's what happened at UCF as we turn the chapter to kind of talk about his time at UCF here. It's just they really never had a good defense, right? So hopefully that's something that Tony White holds up his end. But like I said, man, I feel like, again, when you talk about that high floor higher, if you could guarantee me about 31 points per game, I'm going to feel pretty good about where you're at the end of the game. 31 points a game last year, you surely wouldn't have been 2-10. That's for sure. But let's flip over and talk about some of his time at UCF, because that is the most recent data that we have to go off of. And so when you talk about his time at UCF, there's some interesting things that I want to bring up in this conversation too. Now, this was from 2021 to 2024. He averaged 31.6 points per game, averaged over 30 points per game in all four seasons. So again, this is what we're talking about. You should feel pretty confident that Gus Malzahn can go out and get you 30 points per game. Obviously, that's not 30 points in every game, but you feel good about getting close to 30. Three top 20 total offenses, averaging around 452 yards per game throughout his whole time there. Now, I feel differently about total offenses than some people do. I don't really care about yards. I only care about points. So that doesn't really excite me a whole lot, but it tells you that they're able to move the ball to get in scoring position.
Correct.
Two top 20 in yards per play at, and during his time at UCF, they averaged 6.5 yards per play, which is really good. Top 10 rushing offenses averaging 225 yards per game. And so when we talk about three top 10 rushing offenses, do keep in mind here, Florida State has finished top 15 once in the past 5 years in 2022. Mm. So the rushing offense, again, is one of those things that you can take to the bank here. Now, the caveat to this offense is he has only had one top 50 passing offense in the past 8 years.
Yeah.
So that is a little bit tough there. You just kind of got to know what to expect, right? I think that's kind of why we're laying this out for you to have the expectations. The pass game is mostly there to provide explosives and to enable the run game. That's the important part. So I do want to spend a minute, and I'll kick it back to you on this, but I do want to spend a minute talking about Gus Malzahn at UCF, because I feel like there's so many people that look at that as just an absolute kind of failure of a tenure. But at the same time, I think it's important to first say, like, I don't particularly care about what he did as a head coach, because he's not the head coach here. So Correct. His head coach record doesn't really make a hill of beans here. But there's been some stuff that recently come out in the past week, and this is kind of what I'm aiming at, where he talked about the challenges at UCF. Look, they had to make the jump to Power Four in year three while only getting a half share of revenue the first 2 years in the Big 12. Every G5 team that made the jump to the Big 12 that year, there were six of them. Every single one of them finished with a losing record. It was not just UCF that did it. They had won 9 games and finished top 3 in the conference the previous 2 years. His first year in the AAC, they also played against Cincinnati, who was the first G5 team to ever make the playoffs. Houston went 12-2 that year. Two of their four losses were a close game against Louisville, who was obviously outmatched as a Power Four team, and that Cincinnati playoff team. They even beat Florida in a bowl game. So they were 9-3 in the regular season in 22, and they were only 9 points away from being 11-1. They lost, I think, to Navy by 3, and they lost to Louisville by 6. So they were really close to being 11-1. But then, of course, you had to make the jump to the Big 12, which is a whole different animal here. Right. In 2024, the worst season that he had, they had quarterback problems, Michael. And granted, he wears some of that blame because he's in charge of shaping the quarterback room. But from what I've heard through UCF people, KJ showed up. KJ Jefferson, that is, a transfer from Arkansas, showed up overweight, out of shape, basically missed the entire spring camp, was able to play in the spring game, but that was really about it. He kind of lost the twitch that he had at Arkansas, and he wasn't really a great passer to begin with. So without that run threat, his passing just wasn't good enough to make him a good quarterback. And Michael, does that sound familiar?
Sounds very familiar.
That kind of sounds like a DJU type of guy that we got last year. You didn't have the run threat, and you weren't a good enough passer to be good on your own as a passing quarterback. The last couple of things here was he did talk about limitations in NIL at UCF. Right. I knew, and I had heard that before because I used to record a show with a UCF pod, and he talked about, look, man, we're not really powerful NIL right now. We can go out and get a guy here or there. We can't go out and stack a roster, starting 22 roster with NIL. So, and the last thing is, man, it just sounds like he wasn't happy. And he had actually said that he had considered retirement before the Florida State opportunity came up. And so I just wanted to say all that to say, when you talk about the tenure at UCF, there were some limiting factors there. The offense was still pretty good while they were there. They struggled on defense. But man, I just think he's going to be so much happier in the role that he's in at Florida State.
Well, like, again, it goes back to the simple fact of you have to look at the first, you know, couple years of UCF prior to them moving to the Big 12 and see that his offense was still successful. They were still scoring points. They were still going up against Power Four schools, still having success against that. Yes, he does talk about the fact that they were limited on NIL. They were limited on the rev share for the media contract. So they were only half. And he was saying it was going in, his quote about it was going in a direction that he didn't feel like he could fix because of where it was at, that it needed new blood, a new thing. And he said, and I quote, he said it was either retirement or this job. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Mike came along and said, hey, come back, come to Florida State, come with me. All you're going to focus on coaching. You're going to be an old school football coach, you know, like he always says.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to go on the road to recruit. He only does recruiting on campus. So all he's doing is sitting in the lab, coming up with concoctions of plays and that system. And I think that's what makes Gus Malzahn magic is he has a, if his brain can release all of the recruiting and donors and all like that stuff and just get into football, I think that's why I'm getting excited about the resurgence of what a Gus Malzahn offense can do for Florida State.
Exactly. And that's not a dish on UCF.
No.
To excuse maybe some of the things that did or didn't happen there. It just goes to show you that there are some things that maybe don't get talked about as to why it didn't go so well. But I agree with you, man. Like you said, I think getting back into the lab and just having this be his sole focus, you know, again, like we talked about the last time Gus Malzahn and Mike Norvell were on the same sideline, they were breaking records in Tulsa.
Exactly.
So you would hope that this would be a good move for him to kind of rejuvenate the excitement of just calling plays, man, and getting back to your roots. And so I'm excited to see it. But the offense was still pretty good at UCF. And so let's move in. We've talked about the architect himself. Now let's talk about the offense that he runs. And we'll get into some offensive philosophy here. But, Michael, what better way to start than hearing it from the horse's mouth? So I'm going to play you a quick clip here from the introductory press conference for Florida State by Gus Malzahn, where he talks about his offensive philosophy.
You know, I'm a big believer. You got to run the football downhill. It makes everything better for as far as pass protection, better on the quarterback, everything. I think the big thing is just the emphasis of the downhill run game and being committed to it. You know, we're gonna play fast. I think that's the number one thing. We're going to play fast. We're going to run the football, you know, downhill, and we're going to throw it vertically.
And really, you know, when we talk about that clip, it comes down to the three things, right? Run the football downhill, throw it vertically, play with tempo. That is his offense is really based on. So let's kind of talk about the philosophy here. We want to give you some kind of high level, but also get into it just a little bit here with what to expect from the Gus Malzahn offense. And Michael, I put together a couple of some top talking points, right, for what I feel. Because I've taken pretty much a Gus Malzahn masterclass over the past week or so trying to get ready for this episode. And so when you talk about this, Malzahn's offense is based off the old school wing T from his days in high school as a coordinator. Because really, man, a lot of the innovation in offense comes from the high school ranks, and then it works its way up to college. Then it makes its way to the NFL because you can kind of take some of those chances and risk in college. Michael, I remember back in my days, I graduated high school in 06. I remember my days, right before I got there, our offense was the wing T.
Yep.
And so that was what we were built off of. But coming off of that, man, but it's a more evolved version of the wing T.
That's basic.
And he has adapted over the years. I mean, it's still based on the same basic concepts, like we said, the downhill run game, the deep shots in the pass game, and pushing the tempo. But it's still kind of based out of that same, you know, that same thing. But he has adapted over the years. It's not the same thing as just a regular straight up wing T offense. This system falls into, again, what we call here the smash mouth spread. Basically, it is a power running approach with the space creating aspects of a spread offense. So they spread you out and then they power run. It's not 3 yards in a cloud of dust necessarily anymore. It's spread you out and see if we can go for 30 yards in a cloud of dust. So Michael, contrary to the popular saying, this old dog can learn some new tricks. So Gus has learned a few along the way. Some of the big proponents here, man, is having an athletic quarterback is a big part of what makes this offense work best, right? It forces the defense to account for extra run threat, oftentimes giving you a numbers advantage in the box, which does help create those mismatches elsewhere. We've seen this offense take more of a power running approach with the quarterback. When you talk about a Cam Newton, we've seen more of a zone running approach. When you have the smaller quarterbacks like a Nick Marshall, John Rhys Plumlee, probably what you're going to see from Thomas Castellanos. I mean, I don't think you want, you know, a 5'10", 190-pound quarterback running quarterback power on the goal line.
Right.
But he does have different ways, depending on the quarterback skill set, to get them involved here. The next point here really is the motion and misdirection. You're going to see multiple formations out of here, lots of formations, lots of motion. They're one of the most heavy motion teams in the country to try and confuse the defense. It's not the deepest play sheet, but each play contains multiple options within itself that can be disguised in different ways. A big part of the Gus Malzahn offense is the next point here, which is play sequencing.
Right.
Gus Malzahn likes to run one of his base plays, see how the defense reacts, and then try and counter that reaction the next time a play is run. So, you know, he'll run something early in the series, see how the defense reacts, and then when they come back, they're like, okay, they bid on this play fake, so now we're going to do this, and we might just disguise it out of a different look. So that's a big part of that as well. And then, of course, is tempo, the last main topic here. He actually calls his offense the hurry-up, no-huddle offense is technically what it's called. And it's tempo, man. He's on record saying that he does not care about time of possession. He only cares about offensive snaps, and the more, the better. So the three main principles of the hurry-up, no-huddle offense is to speed up the game. It's like a fast-break offense in basketball, but for the entire game. He wants to control the tempo, get the defense out of their normal routine, and limit substitutions. He wants to lengthen the game. A faster tempo means more plays means more chances to score. But Michael, as you know, that can backfire. That means you can either win by 50 or lose by 50.
That's right.
And then the last thing here really is just to mentally and physically wear down your opponent. Look, it only works if your players are in great shape. So that's one of the biggest keys to being able to run this offense. But it's about putting constant pressure on your opponent. Look, they basically aim to run a 2-minute offensive pace the entire game. Even late in the season when teams are tired and beat up, the punishing style of offense, it doesn't let up on you. Mm-hmm. And so that's really something that's been difficult for teams to prepare. But this style of play is demanding on the player. So like we said, it is critical that you be in the best shape possible. And so, Michael, I'm going to play one more clip here, and then I'm going to throw it back to you because we're going to talk about this offense. And some of you guys might think, well, you know, you're trying to polish up a Gus Malzahn offense because, again, this is you're a Florida State podcast, and I get that. But don't take it from us, Michael. Take it from one of the best defensive minds in the game, Kirby Smart. And so I'm going to play you a quick clip here of Kirby Smart. This was a long time ago. I'll admit that. Back in 2016, he was asked about facing Gus Malzahn's offense at Auburn.
The tempo would be first. Physicality would probably be second. They're extremely physical, which a lot of people don't give them credit for, but... you know, they run the ball downhill, and they spread you out and throw it around the field. So it's frustrating because they use tempo to help them.
Well, every tempo is different. You know, I mean, the tempo is not just tempo. There's tempo. There's mostly zone teams, and then there's some tempo teams that really run at you. And these guys, they do that. You know, and it seems like every time I've ever been part of a staff playing his offense, it's the end of the year. You see him beat up, and they just want to beat you up.
And, Michael, that comes from, again, one of the best defensive minds in the game. Yep. So he talks about the challenges of preparing for this offense. So, Michael, I got some other thoughts here, but I want to throw it back to you. Give me some thoughts on this Gus Malzahn offense, some of the concepts and things that they employ, and kind of how this thing works.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, for you walking into Doak Campbell Stadium, for those of you who are going to be there and those of you who are going to watch this on TV, you're going to see an offense – that looked very similar to what you've been seeing for the last 5 years. So let me just go ahead and get you prepped. Like, you're not going to see some totally different thing. You're not going to see like the go-go where we have, you know, two running backs beside the quarterback on one side of the quarterback, with a Marion offense, unless Gus has adapted some of that, but you're not going to see that. You're going to literally see a lot of what you saw Mike Norvell call. Because Mike Norvell adapted and basically adopted Gus Malzahn's offense. But what you're going to see is you're going to start hearing this term a lot called the power four. Okay. The power four is really, it's a four side one, 4x1. So you're going to see two wide receivers, maybe a tight end and a running back all to one side of the play field and maybe a wide receiver to the other side. You're going to hear a lot of that. Gus loves the power four because it gives the ability to then move that running back, because remember, it's a smash mouth downhill offense, to move that running back into that direction. Now he's going to use, as Jesse said, he's going to use a lot of motion and misdirection, so much. That play sheet is, we wouldn't call it the deepest of play sheets, but man, it is deep in motion. They run a lot of motion. You're going to hear words like jet motion, which is you're going to be running a slot or maybe even a wide out just straight through the backside of the offensive line and jet motion, right? You're going to see a lot of what we call split zone, where you see a tight end maybe move from motion from one side of the offensive line to the other side. But then when the ball is hyped, come back and block that back end, defensive end or corner that's coming on a blitz there. You're going to see a lot of that stuff. You're going to see movement of the running backs because all Gus is trying to do is trying to get the mismatch. Where can he find the mismatch? Where can he put his running back or his wide receiver or the quarterback in the best position to make the play? And they're looking for mismatches there. And so this offense is really cool. It's really like, man, you have to like really pay attention and watch it to see what it's doing there. But it can be the very basis of the game, if you're watching this, is don't get caught up in the misdirection, okay? Because it's either going to be a run, a deep shot, or some kind of east-west pass that then evolves into a screen. And, you know, you got bubbles, you got all those things that you're looking at. But really, the crux of it is Gus wants to get a north-south running game going downhill.
Yeah, and like you said, we're not going from the triple option to the air raid.
Right.
But it's a 60-40 run pass, so you're going to see a little bit more run there. And that's one thing that Gus talked about when he talks about this offense. He said, look, you have to commit to the system. That's and that's one thing that might get a little bit frustrating for us as fans. You know, he says, look, the core principles here, you can't abandon those. This system to work, you got to commit to it. And so there may be times where you're like, throw the ball. You know what I mean? There was times last year with Mike Norvell where you're like, run the ball, What are we doing? We're on the goal line. Clemson, I think he threw it like four times straight inside the five. Like, what are we doing, man? So there might be some times where you get frustrated, but it's all about the four-quarter picture, not picking out like one series and saying you don't like this, that, or the other. But it's going to be – it's very similar. And it's funny, actually, in the Gus Malzahn, I know I'm going to call him Gus Norvell at least once. In the first Gus Malzahn clip that I played, actually the first part that I cut off was him talking about how they're so similar in offense. They have a lot of the same terminology, a lot of the same concepts. Both coaches have different wrinkles,
right?
But it's made it an easy transition, which is another good thing when you're kind of limited in spring camp.
Absolutely. And the other thing I just want to say real quick, going to the no huddle part, is just the desire to wear down the teams, right? To get you in the fourth quarter, you're beat up. They're still got a lot of conditioning energy ready to go. The biggest aspect of this, and we talked about this in the pre-show, Jesse, is first down. Now, in any offense, whether pro style, whether option, whether you know, pound and ground or air raid, obviously first down is always important. But there is no offensive scheme, in my opinion, where first down is most important than this no huddle, you know, up-tempo Honda offense that Gus Malzahn runs. First down is insanely important because when they get a positive play on first down, that's when the tempo gets started. That's when they it's like a snowball. But if you go back and watch the film, when they don't get a positive outcome on first down, the chances of them converting to a next first down or a touchdown drops astronomically. Not even just like, you know, on a normal, you know, and when we say third and long, right, we're talking, you know, third and 6 yards or longer. On most offense, a third and long, you know, there's probably a 20-ish percent chance of conversion rate, right? 20 to maybe 30 if I'm being really generous. On a Gus Malzahn offense, the conversion rate of a third and long is like 15% or less. It is insanely important that they do well on first down.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, a negative play is a torpedo to a tempo team.
Yep.
And then also, this is not a drop back passing offense. So if you get them in third and long and you take away an option of a run, unless you're just trying to like get what you can get and kick a field goal, you're in a bad position because this is not a drop back passing offense. Last thing I got here, a couple of other keys to this offense is coaches have to be able to make quick decisions. Play calls have to be able to put in fast enough. They don't slow down the offense. You got to be able to make audibles on the fly. I think it's also going to help having a quarterback who is familiar with this offense and having the now radio communications. That should help speed things up as well. But some of the adaptations over the years that I just want to talk about why this is a little bit different from a wing T. The first one is incorporating more of the spread looks and to create a lot of that space. You know, typical wing T is more of a tight formation, and you'll see a lot of that in this offense. We saw a lot of that in the early days at Auburn, a lot of really tight sets, nub formations and things like that. But at UCF, man, he really has started to spread the field out. It's not uncommon to see the receivers outside the numbers on both sides. And so he really does that a lot to get that space. The H-back is another modern adaptation of the fullback. It is kind of transition. Michael, do you remember, gosh, man, growing up, the A-Train, Allstott? My favorite fullback. Like, man, bring the fullback back. I would love to see that. But the H-back is basically like if a tight end and a fullback had a baby. This is pretty much what you got, right? It's a Jaheim Bell. It's a, you know, it's It's the one, gosh, his name always throws me off. Pittman.
Randy Pittman. Yep.
So that is kind of that type of player, right? A guy who can kind of get his nose in there like a fullback and do some block and do some running, but also a guy who can go out and pass. And another thing that he's done is that the tight end is now more of a traditional pass catcher in this offense. That's something that's evolved with Gus, which is a good thing because you have some good tight ends this year. Another thing here is the inside zone blocking scheme. In a traditional sense, you will still see some power gap and run schemes with pulling guards and pulling tackles and things like that. But for the most part, since he's linked up with Herb Hand, they primarily employ that zone blocking scheme. In fact, last year at UCF, they ran the second most inside zone plays in the country at 55%. From an offensive line standpoint, of course, we're going to talk about them here in just a minute. Herb Hand loves winning the point of attack to eliminate negative plays and then letting the running backs kind of do that work. That's something that we talked about, right? With the, you know, you talked about not having the negative plays.
That's right.
And so this is actually evidenced by UCF led the country in what is called O-line yards last year, or yards before contact on running plays. And so I'm going to throw this up real quick, just kind of give you an idea of that. This is college football's best run games from 2024. So the farther to the right that you get is more of an indication of a good offensive line. The farther to the left is more and up. So down and to the right is better offensive line. Up and to the left is more of a good running back. And that's why you see Boise State right here up top with Genty. He was pretty much carrying that team. But all the way out here on this little island, all the way to the right is UCF. So they had pretty much one of the best offensive lines in the country last year as far as run blocking goes. So, man, that's really encouraging stuff there. And Herb Hand likes massive dudes. I mean, the offensive line here has a combined average weight of 324 pounds. So liking what he's done there, but we're going to talk about that in a second. But man, the last thing I got here for this offense really is it can be effective, right? It can, but it requires guys to do their jobs across the board. The blockers got to make their blocks. The quarterback has to make the right read. That's huge. The ball carrier might have to make somebody miss in the hole if you get singled on a guy, on a linebacker, or something like that. You're going to need those receivers to secure the box on the perimeter, because when it works, it's a beautiful machine.
That's right.
But any weak point can cause this thing to turn into a negative play. RPOs are another big part of this that helps them hit explosive plays in the vertical pass game. And we're going to talk about the passing here in just a second, but man, they love to create one-on-one matchups in the vertical passing game. They'll send them both of them seam right down the, you know, two verticals, which is eventually going to turn into a one-on-one.
That's right.
And then they like to play off of that. So this is, I think, where the speed of Squirrel White and the size of Deuce Robinson will pay off. And as we talked about, man, the foundation of this offense is built off the run game. They're not going to light up the air with passing, but the passing is equally important, because if you can take away a legitimate pass threat and you can load the box against this offense, it's going to be a long day at the office, man. So one of the things I'm hoping is that with Mike Norvell being involved, you know, Gus talked about, I'm going to call the plays on Saturday, but Mike will be involved throughout the week. I'm hoping that we see some of these passing concepts from Mike Norvell kind of work its way into Gus's offense and you kind of blend the two. But man, I think really to wind out the talk on Gus here is the main questions I have for this season is, can a rejuvenated Gus Malzahn get his spark back that made him one of the best play callers in the game? Will Florida State be able to do the things required to make this offense successful? Good offensive line play, good perimeter blocking, a quarterback who can make the reads. Can Herb Hand finally be the one to fix this offensive line that's been FSU's Achilles heel for a decade?
Decade, yeah.
Can Tommy Castellanos be that trigger man for this offense? Can his passing be good enough? These are questions that have to be answered as we get into fall camp. So, man, that's going to be pretty much it for my thoughts on Gus and the system. There's a lot of what ifs, but there's a lot of, man, if it works, it could be really good.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think you make a great point about the partnership between Gus and Mike Norvell, because, you know, Gus is that, again, smash mouth, downhill, vertical tempo. Yes. Mike has taken this offense and added a little bit more of a passing component to it as well. Mike still has always been, he wants to run the ball. He wants to be successful at running, and he wants to complement the run game with the pass game. That philosophy hasn't changed, but Mike has added in a little bit more of a passing concept that's not just vertical threat or east-west, but even looking at some in routes, digs, some slot. You know, one of Mike's favorite calls, the slot fade. He loves the slot fade, which is, you know, that slot receiver kind of lined up closer to the to the offensive line, you know, kind of going out and up on a vertical route. He loves calling that slot fade. I mean, we saw that to Keon Coleman how many times in 2023, right? We tried it last year. It did not work with DJ. If he called slot brick, we probably would have got more of those touchdowns. But I think hopefully Mike Norvell partnering with Gus in this will be able to give Castellanos a little bit more options in the passing game that will accentuate his passing ability and not be a hamper to it.
Yeah, let's actually talk about that passing offense now. And before we get into some personnel talk, and because when you talk about the Gus Malzahn passing offense, look, it might not be the most fun thing to talk about, but as we said, man, it is a very critical part of this offense. And so when you look at the 10-year average, this is what I put up here, kind of getting some of the new, some of the old, a 10-year average here. It gets kind of hard to get quality stats the farther back in the rearview mirror you get. But when you look at just from an offense as a whole on the pass side here, you're looking at about 364 attempts on the year, average of around 28.2 attempts per game. So they don't throw it a ton. In 2022 was the high with 451 pass attempts. Now, that was a lot. That's more than Mike Norvell has had in any season at Florida State. The low was 289 in 2016. In 2016 and 15, man, they did not throw the ball hardly at all. It was something like 20 attempts per game here. They've only broke 250 yards per game on average once in 2023, and it did fall below 200 in 2024 at 199.7. But again, they had a lot of quarterback issues there. Averaging about 213 yards per game. It was a little bit higher at UCF because those early years at Auburn kind of drug it down a little bit. But the highest average, again, like I said, 259 in 2023. The low was 170 in 216. So they were not throwing the ball a whole lot back then. I think when you look at this, you can pretty much – it's a safe bet this offense is going to throw for somewhere around 2 to 220 a game, right? It's not going to be something you're throwing for 300-400 yards. But I think if you can get 2 to 220 a game, that's going to set up that run game well. Now, when we talk about the distribution of how they throw the ball, and we're going to relate this to Tommy Castellanos here in just a little bit, behind the line of scrimmage is around 24.2% of passes. The short passes is the most predominant range that they like to throw in, around 32.5% there. You also have your mid-range passing, which is from 10 to 19 yards. Your short is 0 to 9. Your mid 10 to 19 is 21% on average. And your deep passes comes in around 15.5%. So they throw it deep, just not a lot. And I think when you combine that with Tommy Castellanos, who has some arm talent but not a lot of arm strength, I think you will see some deep shots. I just don't know that you're going to be throwing at 40, 50 yards down the field. Screen percentage, 20.4%. Now, the one thing I did notice in trending this offense, that did decrease to around 14.2% over the past two seasons. So less screen usage by Gus. Play action percentage did go up. His average is 36.1%, but the past 3 years, it has gone up to over 40%, and it hasn't been over 40% in the previous 8 years. So there's a lot of play action and a lot less screens going on in the offense. Now we'll see if that translates over to Florida State or not. That could have been personnel limitations there at UCF. But the one thing that stood out to me, and I only counted this, this wasn't a 10-year average. This was only at UCF because it relates to Herb Hamm. The average passing pressure that a UCF quarterback faced in those 4 years was 28.8%. FSU under Alex Atkins was 38%, significantly higher. And I believe last year, Michael, I think all three quarterbacks that Florida State used faced a 40-plus pressure percentage. So, I mean, it's looking like you're not going to throw the ball a lot, but when you do it, hopefully it can be efficient and you can protect the quarterback to allow him to make those throws. Gus Malzahn did talk about in his opening presser that some of the best offenses they've had, some of the best teams that they've had, was when they were near the top of the country in yards per completion. So they do like to stretch the field. But realistically, man, a majority of these throws are going to come in that 10 to 19 yard range.
Yeah, they're going to get you side to side, because what they're trying to do is stretch the defense out. So you're going to see a lot of these bubble passes, these bubble screens. You're going to see a lot of these, you know, throw to the sideline and then, you know, have one person go, have one receiver block while the other comes up in there. You're going to see a lot of like little in routes, a little like slants. You're going to see stuff like that. A lot of RPOs are going to be in this offense as well too, which I personally love. I love the RPO scheme because it gives you run pass option. It gives you three options in one. You got three different things that you can do all within the trigger that Castellanos will be making there. But then you're going to be able, you're going to see some downfield stuff, because the downfield stuff actually, you know, it kind of releases the defense. It kind of forces the defense to stop crowding the box. Early on when they run, when those passes are short, the defense starts creeping up. Yeah. You got bump coverage and all like that. But then they take those deep shots, and that's going to force the defensive coordinator and those safeties to kind of play back, because they don't want to get beat and they don't want to find themselves on single coverage on an island. And so you're going to see that, which then allows them to go back to that pounding run game.
Yeah, a couple of the games that I went back and watched, and I meant to say most of it's coming between 0 and 19 yards,
yeah,
because they do a lot of that short stuff like you talked about. But sometimes, man, they come out right out of the gate. First down, first boom. Drive of the game, boom, they're throwing it 30, 40 yards over the top just to try and back that defense off to keep them honest. And that's what you got to do to kind of set up things for the run game, because you know people are going to be keying on the run
right
out of the gate. So, again, not really a prolific passing offense here, but it's functional, and I think that's what you need. And when you look at Tommy Castellanos, averaged about 172 yards per game as a passer. If you remove the Syracuse game, because he only played half the game, that kind of skews his average a little bit there, it's around 193 in 2024. So again, it's a pretty safe bet to expect you're going to throw for somewhere around 200 to 220 yards per game. But can that be enough to open up things for the run? And I think that's the important conversation. And so that's talking about the passing offense, which leads into the quarterback position and Tommy Castellanos, which is going to be a huge part of this offense for 2025. But Michael, we have already talked a lot about this scheme. We've talked a lot about Gus Malzahn. You know how we do here at Plant the Spear.
Right.
We can't talk about anything for 10, 15 minutes. But we don't want to run you guys 2 hours either, right? So we have some other things that we have planned. We're going to break off part two, the personnel part, into a whole separate show. So make sure you stay tuned for that. We're probably going to be recording that on Monday. We're recording this on Friday, so it'll be kind of back to back here. We'll get that out as soon as we can. We just want to make sure we do you guys a service of giving you the coverage that you deserve. And we want to be able to do our fair part of talking about everybody on this team. So what we'll do in that next one, we'll go through each position group. We're going to talk about the quarterback. We're going to talk about the offensive line. We've got some advanced stats and things that I know you guys are going to enjoy. So make sure you check that out again next week. Hit the like and subscribe. Tap that notification bell so you guys can be notified when that episode drops so you don't miss it. Michael, if you know you guys are loving this content, if you're feeling inclined to join the PTS tribe, you can hit that join button. We've had some people have some struggles here with this. You were able to subscribe on the iPhone, but some people are having to go to a browser like your Safari browser and then open it up in a desktop tab. So I just wanted to give you guys that information. If you are interested in joining the PTS Drive to help further support what we're doing here, we got some fun things planned up. We got some giveaways. I got some tickets I need to do some giveaways with too as well. So a lot of exciting stuff coming up. Check out plantthespear.com. We've been dropping some articles. We're going to try and get all this stuff into article form as well. Rate and review on the podcast helps us reach more Noel fans. And so, Michael, that's going to do it for part one. Make sure you check back for part two, and we'll catch you guys on the next one. As always,
go Noles.